West at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. It is Thursday, November 17th, 2016, and it is a BEA beautiful day in mid-Michigan. I mean, we're talking about sunny and 70 degrees on November 17th, mid-November, and we're talking about weather like that? That is crazy, okay, folks? So enjoy it, because it probably won't last long. Actually, I saw the forecast for this weekend, and there is a chance of the white stuff falling out of the sky, all right? So enjoy it. Get out and about, of course, while listening to Current Sports this hour, all right? We've got a great show in store for all of you guys out there. As of right now, the Michigan State men's soccer team is underway against SIU Edwardsville in the first round of the NCAA tournament. All right, exciting stuff as Michigan State gets to host the first round of the NCAA tourney as they hope to make a deep run in the postseason. So with that match going on, we actually have our intern, David Greenberg, out at DeMartin right now covering that matchup. He's going to give us an update later on this hour around the 140, 145-ish mark, all right? So you don't want to miss that. We will also talk about what we started to talk about at the end of yesterday's show with the college football playoff rankings, all right? Those rankings were released on Tuesday night, and a lot of people are a bit puzzled by them, including myself, so we'll chat about that. We'll also talk about the Michigan State women's basketball team, which is off to an undefeated 3-0 start. Torrey Jankowska has led the team in all three of those dubs. And we'll even dive into a bit of NFL talk and talk about the NFL power rankings, in which a team that I have a certain affinity for sits at numero uno of. All right? If you want to be a part of our airwaves, you know how to do so. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, or even tweet us at WKAR_sports or at Al Martin WKAR. Without further ado, here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners. All right, the number 13 Michigan State men's soccer team opens up the NCAA tourney with their game today versus Southern Illinois University Edwardsville at 1 p.m. So again, as I stated, that game is underway as we speak at DeMartin Stadium. Now, in its last match, MSU lost to number 1 Maryland in the Big Ten semifinals, but MSU's 13-5-1 overall record was still good enough to earn the Spartans home field advantage in the first round. SIUE made the tournament by winning the Missouri Valley Conference and ended with a 10-4-5 record. However, the Cougars are 9-0-3 in their last 12 matches. Now, SIUE holds the series advantage 2-1, but the two teams have not met since 1995, a long time coming. It's all or nothing for the Spartans now. Win and move on to face 15 seed Butler, or lose and the season is kaput. Now, if you cannot make it to the match, streaming will be free on MSUSpartans.com. And again, we will have an update from our very own David Greenberg, who is at DeMartin right now covering that match for us. So you don't want to miss that. The University of Michigan men's basketball team takes on Marquette tonight in Madison Square Garden in the semifinal of the 2K Classic, benefiting the Wounded Warrior Project. Now, tip-off is at 9:30 p.m. on ESPN2. This is the fifth straight season that Michigan will travel and play in NY, and the Wolverines have a 7-2 record in the 9 games played at either Madison Square Garden or the Barclays Center. Now, if the Wolverines win tonight, they will face the winner of the SMU and Pittsburgh game in the championship game on Friday at 7 p.m. If U of M loses, I should say, they will play in the consolation game at 4:30 p.m. on Friday. All right, Detroit Tigers play-by-play announcer Dan Dickerson is going to call TV games for Detroit Mercy men's basketball this year. Dickerson will call games on ESPN3.com and WADL-TV, which is Channel 38 in the D. Now, he will call 8 of the 12 home matches for the Titans, and his first game will take place on November 26th when U of D takes on Manhattan. Eastern Michigan University took on Northern Illinois last night in prime Wednesday Maction college football. Now, the Eagles fell 31-24 to the Huskies in overtime. EMU led 21-0 at the half, but found themselves down 24-21 with 13:45 left in the fourth quarter. Now, after a 24-yard field goal to tie it, they went into OT, and the Eagles could not answer the Huskies' touchdown. Northern Illinois has won 15 of the last 16 meetings between the two MAC West teams, with Eastern's last win coming back in 2007. Now, EMU is now 6-5 and will take on Central Michigan next week on Tuesday night. The Detroit Pistons fell to the New York Knicks 105-102 to end their record, to even their record, to 6-6 on the year. Now, Knicks forward Kristaps Porzingis could not be stopped. Scored a career-high 35 points. Carmelo Anthony added 22. Joakim Noah grabbed 15 boards to help the Knicks to their second straight win. The Pistons made it close at the end, and they even had a chance to send the game into overtime, but Kentavious Caldwell-Pope missed a three-pointer on the last possession of the game. Now, the Pistons return to the hardwood tomorrow when they travel to Cleveland to take on LeBron James and the Cavaliers at Quicken Loans Arena. Tip-off set for 7:30 p.m. The 2013 Tigers starting rotation had three nominees in this year's Cy Young race. Max Scherzer, now pitching for the Washington Nationals, won the National League Cy Young Award. Scherzer had 20 wins, 284 strikeouts with a 2.96 ERA and held batters to a .199 average. He also struck out 31.5% of the batters that he faced. Now, Rick Porcello, now pitching for the Boston Red Sox. He won it in the AL. Porcello finished this year with 22 wins, 3 complete games, 189 strikeouts, and a 3.15 ERA. The third Tiger is the only one that is still in Detroit, Justin Verlander. Now, JV received more first-place votes than Porcello, but lost in total points, 137-132, mostly because of the two riders from Tampa Bay that left Verlander completely off their respective ballots. Now, Kate Upton, who is, of course, the fiance to Justin Verlander, she was not happy, to put it lightly, that Detroit Tigers pitcher JV did not win the 2016 American League Cy Young Award, and she decided to go on Twitter to let the world know about it. Now, after the announcement, Upton tweeted, quote, "Hey, MLB, I thought I was the only person allowed to..." Yeah, you can just look up the tweet, all right? Not suitable for us to say on here on WKAR, but you get where I'm going with this, right? Upton continued and took shots at whoever she could, including the two writers that left her fiancé off their ballots, and even told Rick Porcello that he actually, quote, didn't win, end quote. We'll have more on that in just a second. All right, the Detroit Red Wings and their forward, Darren Helm, will miss 6 weeks after dislocating his shoulder against the Tampa Bay Lightning on Tuesday night. Through 17 games this year, Helm had 4 goals, 3 assists, and a +6 rating. Now, Wings general manager Ken Holland said the injury does not require surgery. Head coach Jeff Blashill said Andreas Athanasiou will return in roughly 2 weeks, which means the Wings will be without their two fastest skaters for a while. Now, the Wings will call up a forward after the Grand Rapids Griffins game tonight. The Wings return to the ice tomorrow when they play Alex Ovechkin and the Washington Capitals out in D.C. And lastly, the Carolina Panthers will host Isaac Constance's own, the New Orleans Saints, tonight in this week's edition of Thursday Night Football. Both teams lost heartbreakers last Sunday. The Panthers gave up 17 straight points in the fourth quarter to lose to the Kansas City Chiefs, while the Saints looked like they were going to go up by 1 with a minute left, but the Broncos blocked the extra point, ran it back to win by 2. Both teams have underperformed so far this season, as Carolina is coming off a Super Bowl appearance and is currently in last place in the NFC South. Look for quarterbacks Cam Newton and Drew Brees to air it out, as both teams rank towards the bottom of the league in pass defense. Kickoff, 8:25 on NBC. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in to be a part of the show, 517-355-WKAR. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Tweet us at WKAR_sports or at Al Martin, WKAR. Without further ado, let's start the show.
Sticking up for her man in an epic Twitter rant. Kate's engaged to Detroit Tigers pitcher.
Yeah,
well, I left out what you're thinking. Okay. Justin Verlander. So on Wednesday, Justin finishes second in the race for the coveted Cy Young Award. That's even though he had more first place votes than the winner, Rick Porcello. Well, his girlfriend Kate didn't take that news too well. She tweeted at Major League Baseball saying, Justin had the majority of first place votes and two writers didn't vote him on their ballots. Can you pick more out of touch people to vote? She also tweeted to the winner, Rick, sorry, Rick, but you didn't get any first place votes. You didn't win. Hashtag bye, Felicia.
Did she
MLB,
say anything
keep
else?
Up with
By the
way, times
did she
and
say anything
fire
else?
Those writers.
Carson,
she would go on to tweet another segment of comments that is not in the teleprompter,
yeah,
nor will be on this fine family show in the morning, but is worth when you're at work going back and checking out.
Gotta run for shelter. Gotta run for shade. It's too hot, too hot, too hot, lady. Gotta cool this anger. What a mess we made.
Oh, thank you, Cool and the Gang. That is how we start this afternoon's current sports. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Al Martin. Kate Upton, that was a little too hot. Little too hot last night on Twitter as you just went off, lost it. I must say, though, you did stick up for your fiance. All right? That is what we call, where I'm from in Detroit, that's a ride or die woman right there. Sticking up for her man. Props to you, Kate. Now, I know JV is on a trip out in Italy, so, you know, he probably didn't even have access to Wi-Fi and couldn't voice his displeasure. So, his fiance took it upon herself to do so. I mean, that was pretty ugly last night, right? So, Justin Verlander, and how crazy is that, right? You know, you have three players in Major League Baseball in the running for Cy Young Awards. All three either play for the Tigers or are with other teams. And the only one that plays for the Tigers right now is, of course, Justin Verlander. Max Scherzer and Rick Porcello, the two who poured out those Cy Young wins, used to play with the Tigers back in the day and now have gone on to bigger and better things, right? You know, it's really quite intriguing when you evaluate how these votes went for the Cy Young Award. And, you know, Kate has a point to a certain degree here. You know, you look at Rick Porcello. Rick Porcello had 22 of those oh-so-valuable things called wins, right? And in his 20 starts from June 18th to the end of the year, his Boston Red Sox went 17-3. Pretty impressive stuff. Pretty impressive stuff what Rick Porcello was able to do with the Red Sox this past year, which is the reason why he won the Cy Young last night. But when you look at the votes, and if you're looking for reasons, you know, the Red Sox, you know, won the AL East after, if you look at the previous 2 years, I mean, they finished in last place. Look no further than Rick Porcello, all right? But not just him, but, you know, also the Boston Red Sox ability to win just about every game that Porcello started for over 3 months. And that figures greatly into why Porcello won the Cy Young Award. Now, let's get to the votes, right? And, you know, for yet another week, we're talking about votes here on Current Sports, right? With last week on Tuesday being Election Day. Now, nearly half of the voters put JV at the top of their ballot. Actually, 14 of 30 of those voters had JV atop their ballots. In comparison to just 8 for Porcello. Now, most of the other half had him well down the list, JV down the list, or out of the top five altogether, which was a bit shocking to me. And if you're going to take a look at this year's voting, what really allowed Porcello to pull this thing out was because he received 18 second place votes to only, get this, just 2 for Justin Verlander. Again, just 2 second place votes for JV. 18 for Porcello. So when you do the math here, I mean, you get 7 points for, and again, I'm getting very in-depth here, but, you know, just to break it down as to people are wondering why in the world JV didn't pull this thing out, you get 7 points for every first place vote and 4 points for each second place vote. Porcello, folks, had a commanding lead even before you get to the fact that 2 writers both left JV off of their 5-pitcher ballot altogether. And to call out those 2 writers, you know, they were Fred Goodall of the Associated Press and Bill Chastain of MLB.com. Now, what's particularly curious about those 2 names is that both Bill and Fred cover the Tampa Bay Rays. Yeah, and you know, when you evaluate that in comparison to what Justin Verlander was able to do against the Tampa Bay Rays, you know, JV's only 2016 start against the Rays, he allowed just 1 earned run in 7 innings. So he had a great outing against Tampa Bay. I don't get it. I don't know what was going through Fred and Bill's minds. But Porcello did have a solid year, folks. All right. So 2 writers who cover the Tampa Bay Rays out in Florida weighed into Porcello pulling that win out. And, you know, hey, what's an election without a bit of controversy in Florida, right? I found that pretty funny, I must say. So JV loses, his girlfriend pops off at the mouth. Porcello and Scherzer win. Congratulations to Rick Porcello and Max Scherzer. JV had a solid year, don't get me wrong, but Porcello was solid for over 3 months. So, I mean, you really can't argue either way here. Upton is just defending her man, all right? And I respect her for that. I truly do. And you can check out all of her tweets online, and she went back and forth with a few individuals who bit back at her, you know, defending Rick Porcello in the whole voting process. And yeah, she got a bit antsy. And also, even JV's younger brother Ben, who is a minor league outfielder with the Detroit Tigers, he tweeted some a chart with, you know, you're looking at just Justin's stats for the year. And along with that chart, Ben Verlander tweeted, quote, "Are you kidding me? Most first place votes and doesn't win? ? Hashtag salty younger brother. Explain this." He tweeted that out at almost 7 o'clock last night. And again, JV himself is vacationing out in Italy. That must be a nice vacation. Which is probably a big reason why he didn't even tweet a reaction himself. So, at the end of the day, you can't cry over spilt milk. It is what it is. But the only thing going through my mind, you know, as you know, a radio host who, of course, talks extensively about the Detroit Tigers, is when you evaluate those 3 names, Rick Porcello, Max Scherzer, and Justin Verlander at one point to think that all three played for the old English D. I mean, that's crazy, right? I mean, the Detroit Tigers should have a World Series by now. Oh, that absolutely blows my mind. So what do you think about Kate Upton, you know, sticking up for a man? Because I saw nothing wrong with it. I get where she's coming from. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. But isn't that crazy? Isaac Kynes is right now engineer of WKAR's Current Sports. I wanted to start the show on a light note here. I thought this was pretty entertaining and funny at the same time. But isn't it crazy that all three used to play for the Detroit Tigers? Pretty nuts, right?
Throw David Price in there, and you should definitely be winning a World Series. Let's just put it that way. But no, it is crazy, and congrats to the Tigers farm organization and scouting and free agent signings for gathering all these great guys together only to let them fall apart as you fade into mediocrity as all your former prospects go on to do amazing things.
Right.
Applause, Tigers. Good job. But no, I didn't have a problem with the sentiment of the tweet. Maybe the expression itself was a little bit too graphic.
Oh, man, she's a model. This is the thing, though. Kate Upton is a model. She's a celebrity. You know, that's right up her alley. A tweet like that. Now, if somebody with a little more, you know.
Class, dignity, like
Justin Verlander.
Something like that.
If Justin Verlander sent out a tweet like that, it'll be a problem. But does it surprise you that celebrities pop off like that in graphic detail like that? Not surprising at all with Kate Upton. I don't expect anything less.
No, it's not surprising. And like I said, I respect her defending her man. Maybe could have done it in a little bit better way because just like athletes are role models for a lot of young guys growing up, actual models are role models for a lot of young girls growing up. I wouldn't have tweeted it, but you know what? That's beyond the point. She got a little attention for it, and that's always good when you're in the fame business. But what I thought about the vote itself, I consider myself a smart guy, Al. I like to take a lot of different classes. I'm a political science double major. And yesterday we learned about something called Arrow's Theorem. Mm-hmm. All right, so here we
Okay, break this down.
I'm going to make this brief, but
please
I'm going to break it down.
Please dumb this down because this will probably go way over my head. Please.
So Arrow's Theorem states that in elections, the majority, or at least a large part of the population, never gets what they want. Mm-hmm. Because the thing is, you got so many options. So even though, let's say, Donald Trump actually won the election, obviously a lot of people didn't like him. But if Hillary would have won, a lot of people wouldn't have liked her, right? Mm-hmm. The thing is, there are so many different interests that go in this. You got to keep narrowing it down. And no matter what, somebody is not going to be happy at the end of the day. And in a race like this, where it's a plurality instead of a majority, meaning you don't have to have a majority of votes to win, more than half. You just need the most. There's going to be a lot of separation, a lot of different layers and stratification of the voting. So Justin Verlander, obviously what this voting says to me, when you've got 14 first place votes and 2 second place votes, You're either big on them or you don't like them that much. You thought, maybe you had a pretty good field around them, and at the end of the day, Detroit Tigers –
That's a stark contrast.
It is,
you know what I mean?
stark contrast.
I don't know, and that's what when it comes down to voting. I mean, maybe some of these writers had a gripe with JV. Maybe they don't like the guy. I don't. Who knows? But at the end of the day, I don't understand how some can be so high on the guy, and then some cannot even have him on the ballot.
That doesn't make sense to me not to have him on the ballot.
It's nonsensical.
I do think it made sense to go with Porcello. Now, my vote would not have been for Porcello at first place. But when you break down the actual methodology of this system, Justin Verlander should not win just because he has the most first place votes, because that does ignore so many other interests. And when Porcello gets 18 second place votes, I mean, hey, my vote would have been for Corey Kluber of the Indians.
Kluber
just straight
was great
up.
Yeah.
But the thing is, when Verlander gets 14 first place votes and Porcello gets 8, which I think is the third lowest tally ever for an AL pitcher that actually went on to win the Cy Young. Mm-hmm. You do have to look into the other factors as well. What makes these pitchers special? What other factors come into play? So I don't mind the decision itself to give it to Porcello, but at the same time, I can see how Verlander might be sitting on his couch in Italy right now thinking a little bit like, huh?
Yeah,
you know,
I don't
14
I don't
first
get
place
it.
Votes. That is a lot.
I think something does need to be changed here because that makes no sense to me when you get more first place votes than the other guys and you don't win. David Arlo who's a fantastic listener of ours, he weighed in via social media on our Facebook page. He says, quote, "I thought the electoral math was fuzzy, LOL." So, and I agree with him there. You know, when you break down this whole thing and you look at, okay, you get this many points for first place votes, it kind of reminds you of the whole electoral college in maybe the presidential election in a way. But at the end of the day, Justin Verlander, I mean, come on. You know, you lose a Cy Young, but at the same time, you're still sitting pretty good in life. All right? Making a lot of money. Still a stout pitcher. I mean, the world does not end just because you lose.
You got a girlfriend that obviously loves you. Yeah.
You're dating Kate Upton, for goodness sake. Yeah. All is right in the world of Justin Verlander, all right?
He's going to be all right.
He'll be fine. He'll be fine. All right, let's move on here. I want to get to the college football playoff. Speaking of votes, right, we go from one standard and realm of voting for a certain individual in baseball to the college football playoff and voting for who are the top four teams in college football today with the committee, right? And as you all saw, and as most of you know by now, you know how everything sits as far as the committee is concerned this past Tuesday. You know, what I found interesting in this whole thing was how Michigan and Clemson still in the top four, despite what occurred on Saturday. We had, for the first time since, in a long, long time, since I believe like the 80s, we saw numbers 2 through 4 all go down on the same day, right? Crazy. Michigan and Clemson, though, still in the top four. Michigan remained at number 3. Clemson dropped 2 spots to number 4, and you had Alabama and, of course, Ohio State sitting at 1 and 2. Now, there are a few takeaways that I had when evaluating that top four. The committee is obviously sending a message that right now it values big wins far more than it punishes for bad losses. If you look at, you know, committee chair Kirby Hocutt, he noted this. The Wolverines have 3 wins over current top 10 teams, number 7, Wisconsin, number 8, Penn State, and number 10, Colorado. No other team can play that. So what I've been harping on all year is the lollipop schedule that has been Michigan Wolverines college football. Now, as things are playing out now, I mean, the teams they've beaten, specifically Wisconsin, Penn State, and Colorado, have turned out to be pretty stout teams. And that looks good as far as their resume is concerned. Now, granted, again, I'm still harping on that a bit when it comes to the schedule, just because, I mean, when you play the first 4 of your 5 games of the season at home, I mean, come on, right? Only true road test was really Iowa, and you saw what happened last weekend. But that's neither here nor there. Now, no other team can claim that, though. I mean, 3 wins over current top 10 teams, pretty impressive. Clemson has 3 top 25 wins. Number 5, Louisville. Number 15, Auburn. And number 17, Florida State. 2 more than the Louisville team directly behind them, which would also beat, of course, head-to-head, as I stated. Number 5, Louisville. Clemson with that win early on in the year in that epic Clemson and Louisville game. Deshaun Watson versus Lamar Jackson. So right now, even though you had numbers 2 through 4 lose, the committee is saying, okay, but when you evaluate the overall resume as to who the Wolverines and the Clemson Tigers have beaten, they still deserve to be in that top 4 number. Now, you know, I want to break this down as well. Another draw that I got from what we saw happen on Tuesday night, Ohio State and Louisville. Now, both OSU and Louisville are 9-1. Their only losses to fellow top 10 teams. Now, both teams could win out and, get this, not play in their conference championship game, which is interesting nonetheless, without a doubt. Now, were that to happen, though, it's hard to imagine that the committee won't keep number 2 Ohio State in their top 4, given that it can't add that season finale win over Michigan to its already impressive resume. Now, the Cardinals, on the other hand, likely to finish with, just get this, 1 top 25 win, that being over Florida State. So the question then is, what will Louisville's best argument be? that, okay, we have a possible Heisman Trophy winner in Lamar Jackson. We've heard about this Lamar Jackson hype all year. And granted, if I had to put in a vote right now, Lamar Jackson would probably be my Heisman Trophy winner. But I'm not sold on that entire team. Just because, again, if we're talking about resumes here, Louisville with just one top 25 win against Florida State, I can't put them in. I just can't do it. Even though Lamar Jackson is such a dynamic quarterback, he's been unbelievable. He is must-see TV anytime he gets behind center. At the same time, man, that Louisville team as a whole has not done enough to prove that they deserve to be in the top four. So I think we can just end that conversation right now. Even if they go ahead and win out, I just don't know if the committee will look favorably upon Louisville and say, okay, we need to put them in. Also, I want to bring up this. Washington and Wisconsin, the Huskies at 9-1 remain a spot above 8-2 Wisconsin. So I thought coming into this that the order, you know, might be reversed, given that the Badgers have played a really superior schedule strength to this point, right? Both teams can still win their respective conferences. Those goals are still right in front of them and could end up fighting directly for that fourth spot, possibly, depending on how these last 2 weeks, 3 weeks play out, right? Wisconsin could still get a chance to beat a top 10 opponent in the Big Ten title game, no matter given who comes out of that whole thing, right? Whether it be Ohio State or Michigan. Washington might play two ranked foes, number 22, Washington State, and also the Pac-12 South champ. It also picked up another top 25 win on Tuesday when 7-3 Stanford debuted as number 24. So that's an interesting dynamic, though, between Wisconsin and the Huskies. And I think Wisconsin probably has, you know, I thought that they would have an upper hand over Washington, but I guess I was wrong. So the committee has some interesting thinking there. And also, I want to hit on, you know, the 10-0 Western Michigan Broncos, which are having a stout season. PJ Fleck, shout out to you, my man. College game day also coming to KZU this weekend. The 10-0 Broncos were the committee's highest ranked group of five team the first 2 weeks. But this week, get this, 9-1 Boise State moved up to number 20, one spot above the Broncos. Now, that doesn't automatically guarantee that Boise will beat out PJ Fleck's team for a possible Cotton Bowl berth, and I think that's what they're aiming for now this year, because Boise still needs help in order to win its respective division. But still doesn't bode well, right? Clearly, the committee feels like the Mountain West is tougher than the MAC. That's the message they are sending when they put 9-1 Boise over 10-0 WMU. And I think that will change, though, as the year goes on and the Broncos continue to pile on these wins here. I think they will send a message that they deserve to be in that Cotton Bowl matchup. But I just found that intriguing, that WMU sat below a Boise State. So, and again, I say all that to say this, though. This is all going to change week after week after week. The only college football playoff committee poll that we're concerned about is the one that is going to take place on December 4th. But you do get a small vision as to what they're thinking here. Not more so when it comes to the top four, because at the end of the day, I do believe this strongly. When coming out with these rankings every Tuesday leading up to the final one on December 4th, their job is to get folks talking about college football. And the best way to do that is to create a mix-up, create a bit of controversy, because people love to debate, without a doubt. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will chat about the Michigan State women's basketball team, and you'll get a chance to hear from head coach Susie Merchant after that win over Southern to push that team's record to now 3-0 on the year. We'll also check in with David Greenberg as he will give us an update on round one of the NCAA tournament with the MSU men's soccer team hosting SIU Edwardsville. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. A reminder to you all that right now, the Michigan State men's soccer team is underway in the first round of the NCAA tournament down at DeMartin Stadium, which is a hop and a skip away from here inside of the College of Communication Arts and Sciences building in Studio S. So I'll be heading there right after we get off the airwaves to help out David Greenberg, our current sports intern, who is covering that game right now. And I'll remind you all later on tonight, you'll get a chance to check out the two-minute drill. We will have highlights from that matchup. And right now it sits at nada, nil-nil, 16:39 in the first half. So it's a battle right now. Back and forth. Call in, folks. Be a part of the discussion. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I just finished up my spiel about the college football playoff rankings, the latest version of those rankings, which took place, of course, right after Michigan State and Kentucky, after the dust settled on that men's college basketball game out in New York. Really interesting scene is Kirk Herbstreit and the guys. They were all at Madison Square Garden, and they revealed those rankings live on the air right before Kansas and Duke tipped off. And Kansas, of course, top Duke. That's right. Top Coach K and company on a final second jumper. Pretty entertaining game in that second slate. But you know, I want to invite Isaac Constance to the show right now because Isaac made a comment as we hit the break. And you think that Louisville deserves to be in the top four. Why?
Al, I'm amazed that it took me this long to jump in, honestly. I could not believe that you think Clemson is over Louisville. The thing is, Louisville is being punished, unfairly so, for losing an away game to the defending champs who brought back most of their squad. I've said this entire season, mark my words, Clemson looks like Florida State from 2 years ago when Jameis Winston returned, but they couldn't do anything. They had a relatively easy schedule. They stumbled through it the entire year, and they really were anything but impressive. Clemson, looking at him this year, Troy, 30-24. Auburn, 19-13. Then you've got Boston College, 56-10. Good for you. Georgia Tech, 26-7. Syracuse, 54-0. But then a loss to Pitt, 43-42. Anything but good there. Not that Pitt's a bad team, but that's not a great loss. You've got NC State, 24-17. And then you've got, I mean, you've just got a resume right now of close games that really shouldn't have been that close. Florida State is the last one I wanted to bring up, 37-34. I'm talking about like matchups between these two teams. Clemson only wins that game against Louisville because they're the home team in Death Valley, a night game, all this hype around it. Louisville was by far the most impressive team, and Radcliffe had running back. It's not a one-man attack either. But Louisville, let's go back.
Well, and remember Florida in that game, State, let's pause real quick. Remember in that game, Louisville had to storm back in that game. I want to remind you that as well.
Exactly. Now, but that's part of the reason they were more impressive. But how? Louisville against Florida State, 63-20.
I hear
that
you.
That was a three-point game for Clemson. Then you go on over to the other really close game that Clemson played, which was NC State, a shared opponent. Seven-point game, 24-17 in favor of Clemson. 54-13 in favor of Louisville.
I hear what you're saying, Isaac. I hear your numbers and I hear the point differentials. And you're more so looking at the wins and how close they've been or blowouts. I want to say this though, all that does not matter. The College Football Playoff Committee is sending this message. It's not about that. It's about what does your resume look like? Who have you beaten? Who have you played that puts
Who
you
has Clemson
not,
beaten?
Again?
Who
Clemson, when you look at Clemson's resume, as I stated in that whole spiel, Clemson has been very impressive and has three top 25 wins, over Louisville. They've won the head-to-head matchup against Louisville. Whether you want to break down that game how it went or not, they still beat them. They've beaten number 15 Auburn and number 17 Florida State. Louisville can only credit one top 25 win, Isaac. One. That's it. And that's against Florida State. So when you break down these resumes, Louisville with just one top 25 win against FSU, as opposed to three and one of those against a top 10 team in Louisville, how can you not put Clemson over the Cardinals? I mean, that's pretty simple to me.
Listen, Al, the thing is, both these teams are one losses, right? And
I hear
no
you.
Loss is a good loss when you're on a team. For Rankers, though,
I hear you,
there
Isaac.
Is such thing as a good loss. A loss to Pitt not a good
I
loss.
I hear what
a
you're saying.
A six-point win against Troy is not a
again,
good loss.
But Isaac, a win is a win. And that's the message the College Football Playoff Committee is saying. If you look at Louisville's resume, you're telling me they've only beaten one team out of the top 25 currently. They deserve to be in the top four as opposed to a Clemson team, which beat you. It also has two other top 25
but
wins. Come on, man. That's a no-brainer.
At a neutral
you know why
field.
You know why you're making this argument? It's because you're just like everybody else in the college football world. Everybody is so enthralled and enthused with the Lamar Jackson effect.
Of course
people
I am.
Love
you
watching,
should be.
I love
you
watching a kid.
Be.
I love watching a kid. But I am not sold on that the rest of that Louisville team that they deserve to be in the top four.
One man can change the world. But Cam Newton led his team to a championship.
I hear you. I hear you. Everybody's so enthralled with watching this kid play. And I would love to see him in the college football playoff and would love to sit there and watch him play in the college football playoff. But his team, when you compare resume to resume, his team right now does not deserve to be in that number.
Al, you're talking
Simple
about a
that.
Bunch of eked out wins that aren't that
Three,
good against not
again,
that good team.
I don't
team.
Care what
Auburn
you're saying, Isaac.
It's not that
the
special.
Proof is
Florida
in the
W's. State. Look Isaac, at Louisville's win against Florida State.
Isaac,
Al,
the
proof
again, that's one top 25 win.
And
Clemson has
listen,
three, Isaac.
If you're talking
plus
about the head-to-head matchup,
stop,
though.
Isaac. When there, we're talking about
Al, you cannot
court,
deny if
Isaac,
that's a head-to-head
we
matchup.
We are talking about wins.
Louisville wins at a neutral
Isaac,
or their
you can
home
say
field.
What if. We could you can say all that all day. At the end of the day, they beat the Louisville Cardinals. And that is one of three top 25 wins as opposed to just one for the Cardinals.
And it would be two and two. If
this,
both were at neutral field.
This is simple to me. I don't know if our listeners agree. Please call in 517-355-WKAR. But this is pretty cut and paste simple to me. Ugh. Louisville's resume does not stack up to Clemson.
I think it trumps it just, by a country
no,
mile.
Not at all. You're so caught up with this whole Lamar Jackson
As
stuff.
As you should be.
All right, let's keep it pushing here. The MSU women's basketball team is at 3-0 on the season, and I was actually at that game against Southern earlier this week and got a chance to check out Susie Merchant's team. Oh, hold on. I'm just getting a message here from Isaac that we do have someone on line one. We've got where's David from, Isaac? We don't know.
Soccer game.
Oh, we have David Greenberg on. Okay, I didn't know what David you're talking about. We have David Greenberg on. He's going to give us a quick update. David, hang tight, my man. I want to just briefly mention the MSU women's basketball team. 3-0 on the year. I was at the Southern matchup earlier this week that pushed into 3-0. And what's so crazy? You guys want a stat of the day for you. Get this. Throughout her tenure with Michigan State, she's now a senior now, but Tori Jankowska is now 22-2. Let that soak in. 22-2 when she leads the team in scoring. She's led the team in scoring in the first three matchups of the year. Now, granted, look at the competition. They're not in Big Ten play here. But still, this is a solid start for Susie Merchant's team and does a lot for the confidence of a lot of these young pups who are now coming in and trying to replace players such as Ariel Powers, who, of course, went to the WNBA and decided to leave college early. Here is Susie Merchant on Tori Jankowska.
Yeah, no question. I mean, she's someone that we have to play through. You know, last year was Ariel. She was kind of the complimentary guy, you know, but this year now she's the one we got to get more opportunities for. And, you know, when she scores the ball, we're usually in pretty good shape.
Yeah, you think? That's Susie Merchant, head coach of the MSU women's basketball team. Tori poured in 16 points. She also had 4 assists. And get this, 9 boards for Tori as well. So she was just a rebound away from a double-double in that 70-55 win over Southern. Now, I will say this. Michigan State, I think, got a bit complacent, especially in that third quarter, because it was a 10-point game in the waning moments of that third quarter, and you saw Susie get a bit frustrated. I think they played down to the competition, got to get a bit complacent against Southern, but they pretty much dominated this game throughout much of it. Susie called a timeout, you know, reamed into them, and they came out, and we saw a player in that fourth quarter by the name of Taryn McCutcheon. If that name rings a bell for our local listeners, it should. Taryn McCutcheon used to be a stud, a complete star for the East Lansing girls basketball team. She transferred in for a senior year, and she was must-see basketball, folks, when she played with the Trojans. She's now a freshman with Susie's team. And when we saw in that fourth quarter, Taryn become a spark plug. Just right out the gates. I mean, her mindset and her aggressiveness seemed to just kick into another gear. Now, she only finished with 5 points, which really surprised me. 5 points in that game. She looked great in that fourth quarter, though. She had 6 assists, 5 rebounds. She did turn the ball over. Again, as a young guard, you kind of expect those growing pains to happen. But she had 5 turnovers in that game. But Taryn McCutchen, I think, will be a great compliment to the game of Tori Jankowska, especially if McCutchen shifts her mindset and looks for her shot more. I really do believe she can become something special. She had 2 and-ones in that fourth quarter and really pushed the emotional level of that Michigan State team, which seemed to be lacking a bit in that third quarter, over the hills. I asked Susie about whether or not she thinks that Taryn needs to become more aggressive and what kind of compliment she can become to Tori as the season moves forward. And here's what Susie had to say.
Yeah, I mean, she needs to want to score the ball more. You know, like, we kept telling her to play downhill, go north and south, like, drive the rail, go in there to score. And she would go in there and try to pass and turn it over, or she wouldn't go in there at all, you know. And then down the stretch, she finally went north and south and scored 2 buckets and got herself to the free throw line. So, you know, she's got to get a little more aggressive on the offensive end, for sure. But it was good to see her play downhill a little bit, even late in the game. You know, he's got to get more consistency from her to drive the ball.
Yeah, she is a spark plug, folks. I mean, she's absolutely fantastic. She can get up and down the court very well. She's got great court vision. Really looking forward to seeing how her game matures over time. Susie's team will play on the road Friday night at Western Michigan University. All right, well, as I stated at the top of the hour and have been stating throughout this entire show, the Michigan State men's soccer team right now is hosting SIU Edwardsville in the first round of the NCAA tourney at DeMartin Stadium. And right now we have our current sports intern, David Greenberg, covering that very matchup. And I do believe that score has changed a bit from 0-0. We've got David on line one right now. First off, David, how you doing, my man?
Good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. It's got to be a beautiful day for soccer. 70 degrees and sunny, right?
Oh, it's perfect out here. I can't complain.
So, David, give us an update. I know the score has changed. What just happened?
It has, yes. So it is currently 1-0 MSU. Hunter Baroni, number 7, just kicked an absolute snipe, and it was a beautiful shot. And so now I can give you a little bit of updates about who has the most corner kicks and stuff like that. So Spartans currently lead the way with 4 shots on goal and 4 corner kicks, as SIU Edwardsville has nothing.
Wow. So that's got to be a big difference in the game, I'm sure. Now, is it at the half right now?
The half just started, yes. The clock just hit 0-0.
I got to ask you, because watching that game throughout the majority of that first half, it was tied up. I mean, what do you think gave Edwardsville a bit of a what kind of fight, I should say, did you see from Edwardsville against MSU, a team that hasn't lost at home all year?
Well, they definitely put up a fight. They're playing some very good defense. I mean, they didn't give up any easy goals. The Spartans had 4 corner kicks, as I said, and they had a lot of opportunities. And SIU Edwardsville has, for the most part, put up a great fight. The only goal was, as I mentioned, it was a snipe from about probably 20 yards out. Mm-hmm. And it was just a great shot.
I got to ask this, with this being the first round of the NCAA tourney, David, how's the crowd out there?
Oh, it's pretty good, actually. It's not completely filled to capacity, but I'd say it's about 3/4 full.
Very cool stuff. Well, as I stated, I'll be heading over to meet up with David to compile a post-game report on that very match. David Greenberg. David, thanks so much for the update. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Let's hit our final break. When we come back, we will put a bow on today's current sports by chatting a bit about the NFL power rankings, as well as taking a trip back in time like we do each and every Thursday here on our airwaves. We will hit you with Throwback Thursday. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Before we hit that second break, we just had David Greenberg, Current Sports intern, call in. He's at DeMartin Stadium right now and gave us a quick update in the first round of the NCAA tournament, and Michigan State holds a 1-0 lead after the first half. Isaac, you're a big soccer guy, and you've covered this team throughout this season. Are you surprised?
No, not whatsoever. Actually, I was gloating a little bit behind the glass because my prediction was spot on. I predicted a 1-0 victory for MSU in my article previewing the game for the State News. And the reason is SIU, Edwardsville, has the 17th best defense in the NCAA. They're astounding defensively. It is so impressive what these guys have done. But the thing is, offensively, they average just over 1.2 goals per game. That's nothing in college soccer, especially when you're coming out of the Missouri Valley Conference against such a good MSU defense, which is ranked 31st in the NCAA. I thought they'd have a few problems generating offense, not so much defensively, but if a goal was to slip through for MSU, I think as long as the Spartans can keep possession and hold the harnesses for this one, I think they stay in control, and I think they walk on to the second round.
All right, we'll see. Again, I'll be down at DeMartin. Again, you can catch highlights from that matchup, and also the Michigan State men's basketball team has media availability later this afternoon. I'll be at the Breslin chatting with a few of the players there about what went wrong in New York at the Garden as they now try to shake that loss off, and they will invite Mississippi Valley State University to the Breslin on Friday night. And we'll also be giving away tickets to that very game on tomorrow's show. So keep it locked and find out how you can win and tune in on tomorrow's Current Sports. All right. Briefly here, I want to give you guys a quick update on the NFL power rankings for week 11. And, you know, the Cowboys and Seahawks currently hold the top two playoff seeds in the NFC. The Patriots and the Chiefs are in those spots in the AFC. And, you know, the NFL releases these after every single week is said and done. And get this, you know, the Detroit Lions didn't have to do anything. And they were last week ranked 11th in the league, and they moved up a spot, actually. And it's so crazy because, you know, you look at a bye week and, you know, to wake up on Monday and to see, you know, that you're the team that's sitting in you're a team that's sitting in the top 10 now. Pretty impressive stuff, right? And again, you know, every other NFC North team lost over the weekend, and that now puts the Lions in that first-place position, which is very intriguing. We'll see if Jim Caldwell's team, despite a 1-3 start to the season, let's see if they can shake that off and head into this matchup against the Jacksonville Jaguars with a bit of a chip on their shoulder. So, and again, they play the Minnesota Vikings on Thanksgiving Day, so a short week after this game against Jacksonville this weekend. And, you know, I think those are two games the Lions can definitely win. When you evaluate the rest of the top 10, you find that I want to go to the top five really briefly here. The Oakland Raiders, how about this? Last week they were four, now they're fifth. And, you know, the Raiders are just been one of the bright spots of the league thus far, and really one of the surprising teams of the league thus far. Number four, the New England Patriots. The Patriots with Tom Brady, it seems as though they haven't missed a beat. Three, the Kansas City Chiefs. Last week they were three, and they stay in that position this week. They have a 7-2 record. And number two, the Seattle Seahawks. Russell Wilson through the air these past two games and wins over Buffalo and the Patriots, 45 of 63 for 630 yards, 5 touchdowns. This is the most impressive stat of all of that, though. No interceptions. I think Russell Wilson is finally starting to get his feet under him and starting to play some really good football, folks. And at numero uno, now I'm excited about this, but I'm also keeping my emotions intact because the Dallas Cowboys are number one in the latest edition of the power rankings. Last week, they were number two. They have an 8-1 record. They've won 8 straight games for the first time since 1977. But at the same time, when you evaluate the schedule thus far, according to a few statistics, NFL.com actually has stated that the Cowboys have played the least challenging schedule out of any other team in the NFL. So I'm keeping that in perspective as well. 8-1 is all fine and good, but I'm not holding my breath here. All right? Final 4 minutes here. We love to hop into our Current Sports time machine and take a look at what exactly happened on this particular date in sports history. It is November 17th, and this is Throwback Thursday.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman back over his step. Into the slot for Brown.
Shoots. Yes. Good. And there it goes. You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
All right, let's dial it back to 1869. Yes, 1869. On this date, November 17th in sports history, Englishman James Moore wins the first bicycle race, racing 13K Paris to Rouen. So that's pretty impressive. 1869 is when that started, Isaac.
Wow.
Unbelievable, right? In 1883, the 23rd British Golf Open was won by Willie Fernie. He shot a 158 at Musselburgh Links. And we have two Iron Bowls for you. In 1900, the fifth Iron Bowl took place. Auburn beats Alabama 53-5 in Montgomery. And in 1906, wow, the same year my fraternity was founded, in the 11th Iron Bowl, Alabama beats Auburn 10-0 in Birmingham. In 1926, the NHL Chicago Blackhawks played their first game, beating the Tour St. Pat squad 4-1. And in 1931, we had Bradman. I'm trying to, who in the world? It just says Brad. Okay, Donald Bradman. Donald Bradman scores 135 in NSW versus South Africa, 128 minutes and 15-4. So there you have that, folks. So a pretty eventful one. You got two Iron Bowls on this date in sports history, Isaac.
I'll tell you, I'm hoping for more of a repeat of the former instead of the latter this year, Al. You know, as much as I can hate all these different teams, nothing overplays Bama for me. Bama always will be the bane of my existence.
I hear you. And that matchup will take place, of course, over the Thanksgiving holiday. Alabama versus Auburn at Auburn. Saturday, November 26th. That will be a 3:30 p.m. kickoff. All right, folks. Well, that does it for this Thursday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. That was a loaded one. All right, I'm heading out to DeMartin Stadium to enjoy some soccer. Get out and about, folks. 70 degrees in November? Pinch me. Pinch me. That's crazy. I know Michigan's fooling with us, all right? This won't last long, all right? Just wait until this weekend. All right, thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.